Foodie Films is brought to you by the Cage Club Podcast Network. For all things Cage Club related, head on over to cageclub.me. That's cageclub.me. Hey there, foodie fans, and welcome back to another episode of Foodie Films. Of course, this is your host, your chef de cinema cuisine, Kyle Reinfried. What's going on? What's happening? How are you? Oh, man, the end of summer is near. August went way too fast. Way too fast. I don't know. Like, in July, I was like, okay, there's a good pace to it. And then, you know, I went away for almost 2 weeks, my European extravaganza. Then ever since I came back, it's just like boom, 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 boom. I don't know. What about you guys? Do you have, like, are your summers packed? You know, I've got people, I'm not, this is not me bragging, no hashtag humble brag, but it's like every weekend is something. And while I'm lucky and it's fun stuff, it's like it just makes the countdown of the regular week so much faster to the weekend, it feels like. I don't know. Maybe it's just me. And I'm just getting older, and time is relative, and I'm gonna, you know, someday die, and that's something I have to reflect upon myself and not waste your time, waste your listening. But anyway, we've got a good one for you today. Ooh, we're serving up a good one. We've got the Godfather of Soul. I mean, no, James Brown. We got the Godfather of the Cage Club Podcast Network. That's right, Mr. Joey Lewandowski. We might have had him on recently for a short order session, but I haven't had him on. I've been, you know, not from him, but I've been hearing, you know, through the grapevine, like, Kyle, this is taboo. You haven't had the, you know, the Godfather on in like a year. And I'm like, I know. I've just been, you guys have, you know, been listening. I've had some great guests, but I'm happy to have Joey back on. And we watched this great film. He brought it to my attention. He mentioned it to me a while ago. It's called Support the Girls. And I had never seen it. And then I forgot about it. And then I said to Joey, oh, I want to have you on. And I'm like, what movies? Like, Support the Girls. I'm like, I'm sorry, I have a horrible memory. But I watched it, and I loved it. Spoiler, I loved it. It's a complex film in the case of emotions, but you're going to hear all about it. So without further ado, here's me and the Godfather. Joey, welcome back to Foodie Films. I mean, we just had you on recently for a short order session, but it's been, as we said, it's been over a year since your Foodie Films debut. I apologize to the Godfather for that.
All the way back to episode 2 with Butter. Now, I think the important thing to me is that both of the movies, and this is not important to me at all, but it feels important, that both of the movies that you and I are talking about or have talked about are movies you did not know existed before this podcast.
No, I did not know. Butter came up in searches when I came up with the idea of Foodie Films. Like, Butter came up, and I wrote it down, and then again, long story short, when at your house for the Cage Club, you know, barbecue, I saw that you had it, and I'm like, oh, cool, like, how about this one? But this one, Support the Girls, I even had to ask you, I was like, what movie is it again? And because it was not on my radar in the slightest, so thank you for bringing it to my radar. I mean, we're gonna get into it, but you know, it's a pretty terrific movie. But also, if it does make you, if it makes it feel a bit more special, this is technically the second episode, since I'm still on a every other week schedule. This is the second episode since the anniversary of, yeah, we had
That, of course, it makes me feel special.
yeah, okay,
It's
well,
on, it's
there
an
we go.
honor.
Yeah, it's, well, thank you. Well, let's, before we get into the movie, I know I had you on for Short Order session recently, and we were talking, and we talked about the beer festival by you or anything like that, but anything new in the food realm? Trying any new foods recently? Something I like to talk about with repeat guests.
Well, this is not intentional by any stretch of the imagination, but it will transition us beautifully into the movie
I
discussion.
love
I
it.
went down to one of my favorite, I think probably what I said on my first episode, my favorite food city in Austin, Tejas, to
Yes.
visit my sister. And so I had some barbecue, I had some burgers, I had some tacos. I mean, this movie takes place down in. So here's not how dumb I am, but when I lived in Texas, it's not a chain that is national, but there's Twin Peaks, and they, I think, I don't know if you know Twin Peaks, but Twin Peaks is basically a Hooters.
Okay.
That it's at least in Austin, if not regional to the south or whatever. I'm not exactly sure how widespread it was. I never actually went to Twin Peaks because I've gone to Hooters a couple times. I went to, what's the one up here? Tilted Kilt, which is the Irish or the Scottish version of it. It's all the same. Like
Yeah.
it's underwhelming food that you're paying more for because of the idea of like, oh, there's handsome people around,
Yeah, I
right?
just read the term recently, breastaurant. Obviously,
Ooh,
that's
okay.
towards the women, but there are male equivalents like tallywhackers and stuff like that. But
And
definitely a
in this movie, they reference nut huggers
nut
too.
huggers. Yes, all these clever names of these delightful restaurants. But so yeah, continue.
So I was leaving my sister was going to a sort of a baby shower of sorts at a pool hall, so we went there and we played some pool, and she hung out with the mother to be, and I had some friends who I knew from town come over. And on our way out, I was like, we should find a place for dinner. And I was like, oh, there's a restaurant called Twin Peaks. I was like, that's so cool that they named that after the show. Oh wait, no, I know exactly what that
Yeah, I
is.
mean, Austin's a
So we did
very
not go there.
film-driven city, South by
Yeah.
Southwest, Alamo Draft House. So that would be fair to
Twin
assume
Peaks, of
Twin Peaks,
course.
yeah.
I sort of wish that I had gone to it once just to see if there was like any kind of similarity at all, but I never, it's just, it's not exactly my cup of tea. I mean, not that I have anything against those kind of restaurants. I think I would love to go to Double Whammy's because it seems like the waitresses here and the bartenders here are delightful, but I just, it never really came up in conversation. It was never like a, oh, like, I worked at an office for about a year down there. It was never like, oh, let's all go to Twin Peaks. I just sort of wish that I did because I do like the show and I like talking about the show. And I sort of wish if there was anything like I would love a Hooters style restaurant, but like styled after Twin Peaks, like where it's the red room and people walk and talk backwards and like everything's just like uncomfortable and weird. Like that's amazing. I would eat there multiple times per week, but I think this is just a hey, Peaks as a synonym, I guess, for breasts. I don't know.
Yeah, it's yeah, again, just very smart title for a restaurant like that. I mean, even Double Whammy, I guess that's supposed to be then again saying about commenting on two breasts, or quite possibly, as Brooklyn Decker says at the end for what's the name of the man cave,
Man Cave, the national chain Man Cave,
that
yeah.
they're moving more from breasts to ass. But she's like, oh,
It's still
Yeah,
butt, it's still
still
a
yeah,
B.
but yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's still a B. But yeah, so did you try any new places? I know I when I went last time I was in Austin was for work, and I posted how I went to Voodoo Donut, and you were like, I got to give you
I'm
some.
actually, hold on, literally right now, I will show you, I will take a selfie of myself.
Okay.
I am wearing a Voodoo Donut t-shirt
Wow.
that I got from the original, the OG,
Oh.
in Portland, Oregon.
Oh, okay. I didn't know that. I just assumed it was in it was, oh, I see. As a very oh, that's a cool. I like it. It's very
Literally
simple.
wearing right now, and on the back it says donut. So it says voo on the top line, do on the bottom, and then on the back, do and then nut. So
Yeah,
yeah, I'm
I
literally wearing that right now. Yeah, it started in Portland.
Well, that makes
So
sense,
when I
yeah.
drove cross country, I went there, got a dozen, brought them to my friend. I feel like at least the ones that I went to, like they were good, but I've had way better donuts. It's just the creativity and the imagination and
Yes.
the ingenuity of it that's like, oh, this is cool. But I feel like as an actual donut, there was a, I think a Korean owned donut shop in Austin, like in not anywhere near the city, like it was sort of suburbsy, just on this like sort of like quiet but kind of like Main Street-ish, and they had the best donuts I've ever had. Like you can have great donuts, but Voodoo is cool because it's like, oh, I want to get an actual donut that looks like a voodoo doll with a pretzel sticking himself in the heart.
Yeah, exactly. I like the t-shirt. It looks very, it's like Scooby-Doo-esque, I
Yeah,
feel
for
like.
sure. But I did try some new places. I feel like you, I think when I go to a city, you know, especially Austin, because Austin is the city that I, because my sister is still there, that I go most often. I like to sort of blend the places that I know that I love with a
Yes.
couple of new places if I can. So every time I go down there, I get Rudy's Barbecue, which is gas station barbecue. They bill it as the worst barbecue in Texas, but it's the best. I love it. I also go to Hop Dottie, which is a sort of an upscale burger bar that I love. We also always go to Phil's and Amy's. Phil's is like a burger shop, but I get a chicken sandwich there. It's one of the best chicken sandwiches I've ever had. And next door is an Amy's ice cream. This time I went to a place on South Congress called Guero's Tacos, which was incredible.
I think I'm so bad with names. I always have to look at. I'm gonna pull up my
And
Austin on
then
Google
while you
Maps right
look
now.
that up, we had over on Too Fast, Too Forever, the Fast and Furious podcast that I do with Joe too, we had gotten a recommendation because we sort of got into a burger debate about In-N-Out versus Whataburger,
Oh yeah.
and that somehow led to a taco debate between, not really a debate, but between like Torchy's and Fuzzy's. And I went to a Fuzzy's down there, which was good, but not, you know, mind-blowing. But we went to Guero's, and Guero's was awesome. But yeah, so I like going to the handful of places that I know that I love because it's sort of a known quantity. And even if I don't get the exact same thing every time, I know that the food is great, and I love, you know, like Rudy's. The roast turkey and the sausage and the creamed corn, especially and the banana pudding. Delicious.
Yeah, that's no. I'm this, as you said. Like I try to do the same thing. You know, unfortunately, like a place like Austin, the last couple of times. Well, last time I was there was for work, and I was just like there for like only had really had like an afternoon, a morning, and an afternoon to do my own
Right.
thing, and so I went back to Franklin Barbecue because I'm just like gotta go to Franklin Barbecue. It's more of a challenge than anything because of the whole like a ch like I'm challenging myself because the infamous line that
Sure.
builds
Yeah, I
up
still
there,
have, you
and
know,
I'm like,
having lived there, I told you, like, I still have never gone to Franklin's because I never got over mentally waiting 4 hours for food because I know that there's, you know, if that's an A plus, I know I can get like A minus barbecue with no wait. You know what I mean? In my
yeah,
mind, the 4 hour wait, it's like, I'm sure it's great, but it's also, you know, I don't know.
it's well, I mean, yeah, the barbecue is great, and I wouldn't be someone that would wait in line that long if I'm just like for purely the weight, but it becomes much more because like you go there in the morning and then people were bringing like boxes of like voodoo donuts, so people are eating like it's like it becomes like a
Sure.
tailgating culture, so that can be pretty fun. But then I mean like I think I tried a new, oh, I went to Torchy's Tacos last time. That was someplace.
Torchy's is good, but Torchy's is like very in your face about how rich and kind of extreme it is. Like I feel, you know, I can normally put away, you know, I'm really hungry, I'll order three tacos. Normally I'll get two at a place. But Torchy's, like I can't really go much beyond one because it's so rich. And it's so aggressive in terms of the queso, in terms of the sweet, in terms of everything. Like everything is sort of turned up to 11, to not use an overused phrase, but it's so much. And I kind of, you know, I like Torchy's a lot, but I'd prefer other places. But what did you think of Torchy's?
I like Torchy's. I would almost do the same kind of comparison as what you're saying about Voodoo. That they're
Okay.
trying to become like they're more inventive with their stuff than
Yes.
necessarily, you know, just make something simplistic and taste really good.
They had a chicken and waffle taco, which was instead of a tortilla, it was on a waffle. And oh my God, it was like a waffle bottom with chicken and I think bacon and maybe an egg on there. And instead of a taco sauce, it came with a little maple syrup. And
Yeah, I
oh
was
my
just gonna
God,
say, yeah, the
the
syrup.
greatest. The greatest.
Yeah, exactly. So that's the perfect like example of just like what they're doing versus just, you know, making like a really good homemade tortilla and like carnitas or whatever putting on the inside.
Right.
But no, I just thinking about like movie TV related stuff, or you saying like a theme related restaurant. The second to last time I went for that bachelor party that I talked about and Brian talked about, that you clearly po that we
I
talked
think you
about on
heard about on
so
Eater
many
Cut Podcast.
episodes.
Yeah,
Yeah,
yeah, yeah.
exactly. It's just a famous bachelor party, not for any wild reasons, but just because we talked about it a lot. But we just happened, someone happened to look up, and it was, you know, over like Halloween weekend, and this bar, Nickel City. Had you ever gone to it?
No, I think I remember hearing you guys talk about it, but I never went there. Yeah. What's the specialty there?
Well, I don't know their usual specialty. I think it's just
it was like a takeover or something.
Yeah,
right?
They made it look like Moe's Tavern from The Simpsons.
Yeah.
So that was just really cool. Like that would be. I would love for more like theme. I would be down for like more themed restaurants. I don't or like.
Well, they're apparently. Yeah. I don't know if you had heard, but they apparently are doing a Friends for the 25th anniversary. I think maybe the first episode of Friends. They're doing something in New York.
They're doing a pop-up there. Yeah, they've done it in L.A. before, which Brian Rodriguez, host of High School Slumber Party, my co-host for P.S. I Still Love Hoffman, is, you know, very upset. We both very much love Friends, but he is a big, you know, Friends fan, and he's just like, I don't get it. Like, I know they shot in L.A., but it's a New York show. It should be, the pop-up should be in New York. Like, they had a... hopefully, with Coming to America 2 coming out, they will have another
McDowell's, yeah.
And that will go into Queens versus they had one popping up again in L.A. Like, right now, they have a, what's the name of the burger? And we even covered the movie. I'm totally blanking on Kenan and Kel.
Good Burger.
Good Burger. Yeah, they have a Good Burger establishment popped up in L.A. right now. That makes sense because it was California. I don't know. I just like it being, I understand L.A., obviously, movie, films, TV, all that.
Well, yeah, it's kind of the version, like, A24, who's one of my favorite production studios, is doing their A24 hashtag public access everywhere. And so they're just showing movies that they've made sort of in the location where they take place.
Yeah.
So they're showing, they showed Moonlight down in Florida. They showed Good Time, I think, in either Brooklyn or Queens. They showed The Witch up in Vermont, and they're just they're basically building or renting out a billboard, and they're just inviting, like, in a park or like a public space, mm-hmm. and they're just showing the movie for free. They're sort of having a little party and just kind of doing this like whole publicity stunt. It's awesome.
That's really cool.
But I think that's really cool. Yeah. Like, when you're able to either pay respect, like, even if, you know, I don't, it's not like they're making money on the Good Burger thing other than people paying to sort of live the nostalgia. But whether you're marketing for yourself or just doing something that captures the hearts and minds and memories of the people who want to attend, I think it's a cool idea.
So do I. I think that, I mean, we, you know, we live in a time where I think people are finding more like specialty things to do. And I obviously see it a lot in food and drink. And I think that that should translate more. I mean, I also see, like, you know, these pop-ups happening for TV shows or movies. And I think that would just be a cool thing to get people, I don't know, just like, proud of where they live, or just, I don't know, it's just one of those things. Everyone loves watching something and be like, I know that place, I've been there, and it just makes it like a more you know, you showed in the place where they filmed it. It's a pretty, you know, special event. So that's,
I'm just hoping that if they do a McDowell's pop-up again in New York, you go there, because I think as much as I love the first cut episodes, my favorite thing that you've done on the show is you going to McDonald's and getting the McDowell's version, basically, of the Big Mac.
Yeah. Like,
that was the coolest thing that you guys did, and I want to make sure that you do. I'm sure, I know that you, as an opportunist, and I use that in a complimentary way, would not allow the opportunity to go by you without doing another follow-up, but that was still the weirdest and funniest, just like a 7-minute thing of you guys going to get burgers. Just like, oh, okay, I'm literally on a journey with you right now. So
yeah,
if they do one, I hope that you give a Foodie Films Redux and go for another burger.
Definitely. I would even love to, I mean, we'll make a podcast episode, but I would definitely love to do a video for that. That would be a lot of fun.
Oh yeah.
I was very tempted to like just fly out to LA and try to do like go to a Good Burger or whatever if I found like a cheap flight. And then I'm always thinking like, well, maybe if I go to this place and I find enough, you know, I'll set it up so I can find enough guests that I'll record with them out there and I can justify it or something like that. But maybe, you know, hey, let's get those sponsors and maybe that'll start happening.
Nothing but time.
But so with this movie, Support the Girls, like you said, filmed in Austin, Texas. They really didn't show. I mean, it's like the outskirts. It's just kind of like the highways going into Austin.
Yeah, you can see 35. Yeah. But I think that if you don't know that that's 35, it's just a highway, right? Like, it's just, they show Texas, I think. I think they hint at that it's Texas, but I don't know that unless you know the city. And what's cool about the movie, I think, is that for the most part, like 80% of the movie probably takes place at Double Whammy's. Like,
yeah.
It's, you know, they go on a little bit of a road trip, but most of it's just in the one place, which kind of could be, you know, anywhere.
Yeah, I was even, when, you know, watched the full credits and everything, and then I looked up, you know, location, and it said purely Austin or whatever, but then, you know, it said location scout, and I kind of laughed. I'm like, well, that was a kind of a easy job for this movie, as far as, but I mean, even one of the destinations that, you know, isn't, is also at, like, a juice bar, so I'm a big fan of that. But like we said, Austin. And as I said before, it's, you know, big movie city. South by Southwest has had its premiere at South by Southwest. The director writer Andrew Bujalski, I'm gonna
Stuff like that.
Yeah, he is the godfather of mumblecore. That's supposedly a title he's been given. Which, if anyone doesn't know what mumblecore is, it's a subgenre of independent film. Usually, you know. Signs of it are, you know, naturalistic acting, dialogue, obviously the low budget, and those kind of things, which, you know, this definitely had, you had your Regina Hall, and you had your Haley.
Well, Haley Lou Richardson, yeah. My favorite.
I was going to ask you, did you find this movie because of her, and being in, I know you really enjoy the movie Edge of 17.
Right. So, I don't remember, there's one of two ways, because this topped a lot, of, not at the top, but it was on a lot of best of the year lists last year, and I don't remember if I knew about it just from those, like it was getting buzz. I do love Haley Lou Richardson from Edge of 17, which I talked about with Brian on High School Slumber Party. She's also incredible in, I don't know if you've seen Columbus, but if you have an architecture podcast, Columbus is a must watch.
Oh, okay.
Columbus is incredible. It's her and John Cho. And it's one of the best movies of the last, like, decade.
Wow. Okay, I'll have to check it out.
And then I also love from this movie Dylan Galula, who is the new... She's Janelle. She's sort of the new hire that shows up first. She's the early one. She was on Kimmy Schmidt, but she's also just super funny on Twitter and Instagram. Dylan Galula. But she's great. I definitely didn't find this because of her. It was either because of Haley Lee Richardson or because of just it
being
having
on list.
Good buzz. Yeah. But I was glad that I did because I think, you know, for such a small movie, I think obviously Regina Hall is, like, you know, on another level here. Like, she's incredible in this movie. But I think that Haley Lou is so, she's like a force of nature.
She really is.
The greatest thing I've ever seen in a movie. That's not true. It's a slight exaggeration. But, you know, Regina Hall's outside having a moment, like things are just breaking bad for her. And she goes outside and she's just like flipping off the sky, like, what do you want from me? And then Haley Lou comes out and she just shoots the confetti gun and she just says, you're the best and we love you. And it's like, it's so purely positive.
Yes.
And I think what is wonderful about this movie is that this movie really does a great job of showing like the absolute best and the absolute worst in people. And I think that Regina Hall is just like doing everything she can to make sure that these girls who are working what feels like, you know, probably makes good tips because it's the kind of bar, but like a kind of a shitty job, but wants to make sure that no matter what happens, they have a good day. They have a good experience. She's trying to be the best manager she can be. And everyone, intentionally or not, is just taking advantage of her. And it's just heartbreaking. And I think that just her perseverance through all of that and the way that Regina Hall like portrays that and embodies that, it's just amazing.
It really is. I love the way this movie starts off, even from its title sequence, that we have just a song playing very like diegetic and we're getting the highway sounds. And even later in the movie, I think it's the last scene, she says, oh, I love just the sound of the highways. It's almost like, you know, being at the beach and it'll put me to sleep. It's like hearing the waves crashing. But we just begin with that, and it's just even very like colorful. I was kind of curious, like, if it was everyone's like own signature. I don't think so. I think it was just, you know, different ways, but it's just colorful. It looked like just like a marker writing all the actors' names and all the, you know, director of photography, so on and so forth. And then right away we get Regina Hall crying in her car, and we don't know why. And then we get the very, you know, happy Haley Lou coming up, knocking, you know, her character Macy knocking on the window, and then just giving her, you know, does she give her a hug right then? I know at the end, you know.
I think so.
Yeah, and at the end a bigger hug, and she's like, oh, we're not even supposed to be, you know, doing this, but whatever, because at that point Regina Hall is Well, they've all, well, she quit and two of them have been fired. But yeah, it's just, and then we just dive right into, I love movies like this that we just get thrown right into their world and then thrown into Regina Hall as the general manager's position, right? Or is she, they say general manager, but she's kind of like
She is general manager, yeah,
but
because
she's
the
also
guy
the
who's the
day
owner.
manager and the night manager, or?
I don't know. I think that, Cubby is the owner, and
Yes.
so he owns the establishment, and then Regina Hall is basically his second in command, and she's sort of in charge. I think she just does the day to day. And whether or not she's the day manager or the night manager, I think she's just the
Yes,
one that's kind
definitely.
of running the ship, right? And so there's, probably other managers or whatever below her, but it feels like for a relatively small business, it feels like it's Cubby, and then it's her, and then it's kind of the 8 or 10 or 12 or however many people we don't see,
Double
waitresses on staff.
whammies is just a very well-worn in local spot, and again, like just right off of a highway in the outskirts of Texas or outskirts of Austin. And it is, this movie, as much as you said, it shows the best qualities and the worst qualities of people. It definitely, in my opinion, at some moments, because going into it, I was like reading a little bit, said drama comedy, and while there are a lot of funny moments, boy, did this movie just make me depressed at certain points. Just even seeing,
Oh,
again, from
yeah.
the people to the location, just to like the way that she's explaining. So they're getting what I think in the beginning. There's like five new possible hires, and then she's keeping them on. One of them leaves, but then four of them stay to do this car wash because one of the workers the night before ran over her abusive boyfriend and now is going to have court fees and all that kind of stuff.
But we don't really know that at that point, right? We just know that she was in a car accident and needed money, or she hit somebody with a car and needed money.
Yes.
And then that's,
Yeah, and need
I
it.
feel like that's the one part of
Yeah.
this movie that is explained, but I think could have been done better, is that it feels like there's like a history there between Regina Hall and the boyfriend, and I don't know if it was something that was cut out or if it's something we're supposed to intuit that he's like a drug dealer or abusive or just a bad boyfriend or whatever. But I feel like knowing that she, like when she sees him, she's like, oh, I know exactly what this is, and you're not getting the money. And I feel like you're on her side there, you understand why she's upset, or you understand that she's upset, and you understand that she's sort of righteous or right in being upset. But I feel like the articulation of exactly the backstory there, even if it was just like a scene or a conversation or something earlier, I feel like we needed a little bit more. But that's like my one kind of nitpick in this movie that's otherwise, I think pretty great.
Yeah, it does feel a little bit. I mean, with the confrontation, once Lisa gets home, and then what her Cameron isn't there, he left. But then it's just what are their names? It's
Which ones?
the one that got with that ran over her boyfriend.
Oh, I don't know. I just know Macy. I basically know the ones. I know like Macy and Danielle and Janelle. I don't
Oh,
know the.
Shayna.
Okay. Well, I think that's also, in terms of the names, I think what's really kind of not it's cliche, but in a funny way, is that at the end when they're doing the not the, I call them the auditions because it's basically it looks like a casting
It
couch, right?
yeah,
Like
it does. Yeah,
it's
definitely.
this lineup of like beautiful women in like scantily or beautiful girls essentially, like right, like all 18, 20, 22-year-old girls in like scantily clad or sort of like revealing-ish, but like professional but revealing attire, and all of their names are like Alana, Rachel. It's like all these like very cliche, like just sort of kind of white girl, like these kind of names, right? And I think the movie does a good job of sort of characterizing people just based on their name alone. Like I think for the people that we have, like Danielle and Macy and stuff like that, like they're more grounded because they're actual characters. But I feel like to flesh out the world, I think that this movie does a really effective job of using names to convey sort of an archetype of who that person is.
Definitely. And like you said, I mean, it does feel like them auditioning because even when they are in that hallway, the door opens a little bit and you just see, I guess, whether it's the owner or whoever is deciding, for Man Cave is just, we don't even see his face. We just kind of see like his lower torso and him just sitting there kind of man spreading.
Yeah,
And it
behind a
just,
tripod too. Like there's
yeah,
a camera, like
behind a
they're filming
tripod.
these. Yeah,
Yeah,
it's
it's got
just,
a
oof,
v
it's gross.
this movie does not necessarily paint the best picture of its male characters. We've got the one cop that's nice and Macy thinks is cute, And but even at one point, I think it's Danielle kind of notices him, like, you know, staring at one of the new girls, or maybe that, you know, her ass. And then definitely between Cubby and, I mean, patrons like that biker guy or the boyfriend of Shaney and people like that, you know, we're getting just not these good male figures, which is, you know, I mean, fine, but it just makes the whole scene just feel much more depressing. Just this very, I feel very terrible for the women in this movie. And I mean, and I think that's the point. I mean, like I said, I watched it all the way through the credits, and it says at the end, for mothers. And then you just hear a male voice going, sweetheart, sweetheart, oh, sweetheart. And that's then the movie, you know, that's after all the titles, all the, I mean, all the credits. And so clearly this movie has a message. And what, I mean, what do you think about that? What do you think of
I mean, I think it's just, again, the best and the worst in people, because you have the customers, like you have the regulars, and even the people who are like that they know are harmless, but like that video guy who just has a crush on the one girl, and she's a mother, right? And she's got the son that she brings to the bar, and she's just trying to make a buck. And then she knows that she can sort of manipulate her relationship, if that's what you want to call it, with this guy to get a free sound system for the fight or for the car wash or for whatever. And they go over there. Danielle and Regina Hall's character go over there, and the guy's just like I think it feels real and natural in a way that is uncomfortable and sad, because he's like, oh, you know, you don't have to worry. I won't do anything consensual. I won't do anything that's not consensual with her. And Danielle's like, oh, yeah, I would kill you. Like, what do you?
Yeah, I
What do you?
love
Like,
both of their
that's not even
responses.
in my head. What do you think is going to happen here? Like, we're in your place of employee. We're not going to have sex. Like, I'm watching your stupid thing to take advantage of you, and you know that. But like, it's just this what feels like he says it sort of as a joke and sort of as a harmless thing. But it's also like, oh no, like that's just kind of the mindset of like a oh, I still think that I could have sex with this woman here. It's like, well, no, not even a little bit. And I think it's that in many different facets, many different ways that make you feel empathetic towards these women and towards, you know, all women in all retail. Like, I'm not saying, because I think this is like the bare minimum, but I'm not saying that I'm like a beacon of goodness, but I know that when I was working at Best Buy for like a year out of college, there were, say there was 100 employees in the store, like 90 of them were dudes, right? And I just knew in my mind, like I know that, you know, I'm spending time with these people every day and there were cute girls there or whatever, but I was like, I'm not going to even like flirt with them, like even like harmlessly, because I know that like that's what they're dealing with all day by the
All
other 90
day, yeah.
employees and by everyone who goes in. They're like, oh, like this girl likes video games, like, oh, she's the one for me. It's like, well, no, dude, like she, like, and that's just amplified across everything in all facets of life, right? But especially in retail, especially in a world like this where the girls are being paid by, you know, their job is to be friendly and flirty with you so that you upsize to the big ass drink and give them an extra $2 tip, right? Like
Yeah,
it's
friendly, flirty, and wearing, you know, skimpy clothing.
exactly. And just it's so like they're basically, it's not saying that you can't hit on a bartender, hit on a waitress. It's not like you can't develop a relationship with them or a friendship, but it's like just treat them like people. Like they're not smiling at you because they like you. They're smiling at you in theory because it's their job and because they might get a couple extra bucks tip. And it's not manipulative. It's like it's the experience you're signing up for. And I think that's what they talk about early in this movie, where they're saying like, you know, if guys want to go to a strip club, they know where they are. They come here to be taken care of by cute girls who want to like attend to their needs or whatever. And that is what it is. But I think that at its core, like that's the selling point, right? That's what their mission statement is. But then you have guys come in here and they're like, oh, you're ugly, you're not hot enough, you're blah blah blah, you're too fat. And it's just the insidious nature of, you know, toxic masculinity, fragile male ego, all that stuff, or just like normal everyday low-key creepiness and just degradation and sexism bubbles up. And it's like, oh no, these people who are mothers, who are daughters, who are friends, who have a full life, a full story, a full ecosystem, whatever. It's like they all have to deal with this literally every day, and it's terrible.
It is, and it's even sad at the end. I mean, they have a strong moment, and I mean our three main characters of Lisa, Danielle, and Macy, of just screaming off of that rooftop of the building where that you know Lisa was applying, and pretty much Macy and Danielle were, as you said, like auditioning for those roles of the you know at Man Cave, but Danielle says to Lisa, like, oh, don't be mad at us, like, and don't, you know, don't be angry. She's like, you know, and, you know, because Lisa keeps going, like, you've got a son, like, you can't afford to, like, go ahead and do something stupid like that and lose your job. And she's like, there's plenty of shit jobs out there. And that moment, like, while she's trying to make, like, Lisa better, and it probably did, because Lisa knows then that that's true.
Right.
Just made me feel just so, just horrible. Just that, like, because again, because it is true, and that is just like she, you know, I mean, because Lisa is talking, I can't remember the son's name, Danielle's son's name, but you know, she's
McCray,
being,
I think.
Yes, yes. And she's being, you know, very kind with him and being, you know, just like almost, you know, like an aunt figure in a way. And while they're waiting for one of the employees that has her, you know, her day off to come and pick him up because he's not feeling well. And so, you know, but he can't stay at Double Whammies. But you know, she's talking to him while he's coloring and like, oh, why can't that, you know, is that ninja? We don't know. Is that a woman? And even the boy goes like, oh, she doesn't have boobs. Like, it's just, we were hearing in an early conversation from him, like, that's, you know, a key thing that we, you know, associate. Yeah, that's, oh, yeah, that's a woman. A woman has boobs. And, but, you know, clearly has a strong woman in his life and as you know, as his mother, and she'll do anything and take these shit jobs because you know she sees and says like her son is so smart and so kind, and we just hope that that you know by her sacrifices that stays on the same path. And I don't know, like maybe this is something that as a son, you know, Andrew Bujalski witnessed, you know, maybe this was, or maybe he just he had an aha moment, a you know, I mean a word that's just a little overused now, but a woke moment, and realized, you know, yeah, this is something that a lot of mothers and you know parents and you know parental figures are doing. But yeah, it's just it's
and it's kind of a bummer for him because he's got such positive female role model around him. Like I know that his mom is, you know, working in this kind of restaurant and everything, and she's just trying to make a buck. But, like, even the new girls are like, oh, at the car wash outside, like, there's a guy with a Hummer, and we thought that he might want to see it. Like, they're even, like, people who don't know the kid are kind of looking out for him. And so it's just a bummer to see that from a very young age, even with all this positivity and these, you know, positive role models around him and sort of examples of strong, kind, loving, giving women, that he's still differentiating. You know what I mean? So.
Yeah. Like, when they come, when, Danielle comes back over from that, you know, the like audio, you know, video store, and says to Lisa, like, oh, yeah, you know, we got the speakers. We just got to give them free lunch for a week or whatever. And she looks, you know, at her kid and goes, you realize your mom is Wonder Woman, you know, and just like there is that, you know, like they're trying to make, you know, this aware to him. But, you know, I mean, certain things. I'm just even realizing more. I'm just, it's kind of in my mind more and more. I mean, just in general nowadays, but having a 1-year-old niece and just thinking about her and who she'll grow up to be and just all like the, you know, jerks that are out there and just like what you can do to prevent it. And you just even think from a kid's standpoint, like you can, from, you know, like you can teach your kids the right things, but they're going to learn things from other kids, and quite possibly, you know, like he's hearing at school, like, yeah, girls got, you know, girls have boobs and boobs are, you know, awesome. And that's what they are. And the, you know, and just such a wrong face value. That's, you know, just painting the completely wrong picture of what pretty much every woman is doing in this movie. Besides, I guess the, you know, we even see it in that tragic character of Shayna, that she ran over her boyfriend, but now, you know, he was there and he was on crutches and he's being a complete asshole. And, you know, but there are, I mean, let's try to think of some of the funnier parts, like you said, like I love that moment with Macy where she just jumps right outside. And
well, I wrote down, there's a couple Macy quotes. That there's "We're the you're the best and we love you." There's number one.
Mm-hmm.
There's one where she's just walking through, and then Regina Hall's like, "Oh, you know, this is sisterhood, right, Macy?" And she goes, "Sisterhood, woo!" And just like there's the passion, there's the excitement there, and then she's just all movie long, she's drinking chocolate milk.
Yes.
And this is also a character who has developed a relationship with what feels to be like a 70-year-old man, the professor, mm-hmm. that they call him. And she's dating him because he treats her well. And it's just like, well, she's not that that's not going to work, but it feels sort of misguided. Like she's sort of lacking a father figure, or she's lacking, you know, genuine affection in her life or whatever. And it's sort of like her character is complex and feels real because of that flaw. Like otherwise she's just like this bundle of pure energy, and mm-hmm. you know, she's drinking chocolate milk all movie, and she's like, and Regina Hall says, "I don't know how you can drink that." She's like, "Oh, chocolate milk rules." Like it's just like this like really sweet, earnest, like really kind of embodying this young girl. And then I think she's a lot of the characters in this movie are kind of like an onion, like they have layers to peel back and everything. But I think that when Regina Hall quits and she's walking out, and then her car needs a jump, and then Macy comes out to jump her car, and then like you can sort of see that like they peel away the veneer of the like basically bunny rabbit exterior of Macy, right? Like I'm sure. sort of outside, you're not my boss anymore right now. I'm gonna be real with you for a second. I'm dating the professor. And she's like, "Everybody else knew, I'm so sorry." And I feel like there's that layer, and then there's just like the added complexity under that of why she's dating the professor. And I think that there's, you know, I know that we you wanted me to sort of say that the funnier things, the more uplifting things, I sort of got to this dark, you know, pit at the core of this character. But like I just think that, you know, there's so much going on there with her that it's this, you know, she's the most uplifting and most exciting and most energetic of the movie, but then you sort of chip away at it. And I think that's sort of, she's sort of emblematic of both everyone in this movie, but also just of everyone kind of in this profession, right? So I don't know.
Definitely. I mean, even in that last scene where she goes up on the roof and she first does her, you know, like scream, but it was she, and Danielle just goes like, "No, that's like a party scream," and Danielle goes up and does, you know, like a warrior scream, just like a real vetting, you know, of emotion scream. And then Macy, you know, then mimics her, and then Lisa finally gets up, and they're all like screaming together, just getting just everything that we just experienced with them in that. I mean, that's a later day, but you know, the day that this movie for the most part takes place in a day, and obviously everything before that that everyone's been dealing with, just as far as Lisa dealing with Cameron and wanting him to be more open. And it's a great movie to watch for men to watch to understand that. I mean, I know Brian and I have talked about this on definitely PSI Still Love Hoffman, just because of the roles that Philip Seymour Hoffman took and the vulnerability and saying, and while, I mean, maybe we say it sometimes in not a joking tone, like that we're not, that we don't mean it, but because it is awkward to talk about, but like this movie is showing that like men can be vulnerable too, and should be, and should express their emotions. And that's all she wants to him, because there was the one line that I wrote down from this movie was something that Lisa says to him, and she put, "I can take fucking up all day, but I can't take not trying."
Yeah.
And that is just, I mean, something that I also believe in. I mean, I can be very guilty of being a procrastinator or just, you know, or being lazy, but I don't think I am, at least when it comes to my relationships with people. Maybe when it comes to, you know, like work and obviously editing podcasts sometimes, you know, and stuff like that. But I think at least, you know, but the main thing with this movie is just saying, and what Lisa is really saying, like by saying we're a family, is like, you gotta be there. And she's just not getting that at home. And when she goes to leave, when she, you know, quits, and then Macy has to jumpstart her car, she's like, "Oh, maybe I'll just go home and have a, you know, try to have a conversation with him." And then, but when she does get home, she finds out that he did leave. I mean, he left the laptop, where she said you just always are spending time on the laptop and being sad on the couch.
And I think that's the whole thing, right? Like, it's about, you know, nobody's perfect, and actually, a lot of people, like, most people are far from it. And, you know, I'm much more willing to give somebody the benefit of the doubt if they care, if they show effort, if they care about something, if they're passionate about something, if they, you know, not to peel behind the curtain too much, but I know that, like, with this podcast in particular, right? Like, I know that you are trying to figure out what Foodie Films is going to become. And I think that
Oh
you've
yeah,
done
it's still a
such exciting
never-ending
things
journey.
and you've got such great conversations and you've had like both the first cuts and the movie discussions and everything. But I know, like, as not frustrated, but as like, as you're like, oh, I don't know what I'm doing this week or what I'm sort of changing the schedule again. Like, I don't mind that because I know that to you, like, this matters so much. And as opposed to like, if you didn't care, like, you know, when I, again, not to, again, peel behind the curtain too much, but like, whenever somebody's like, I want to do a podcast on the network, I'm like, look, two things. Hit a deadline, like, set a deadline you want to hit and hit it, and then have it have good sounding audio. And like, I just want to make sure you have the passion for that you want to do it, right? And if you were like, well, I don't really care, like, I'm just sort of half-assing my episodes or whatever, then I would be like, well, why are you doing this? But I know that this means so much to you, and that I'm willing to sort of, you know, give you the benefit of the doubt or whatever, because I know that you want this to be the very best, and you're having great conversations, and you're building roads, and you're developing relationships, and it's exciting. Whereas if somebody's just like, well, I don't really want to do this, I don't like doing the work, blah, 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 it's like, well, what's even the point? And so I think that in whether it's at food or with podcasting or with whatever, I think that if you care and people can see that care and see that passion and see that, you know, just energy, it's worthwhile, you know? And it's a bummer to see people who just like in this movie just take advantage of you, that you know that your boss is great and that you can sort of maybe scam her for money for the hospital bill. Like, oh, you know, I'm in a bad way. Can you pay my hospital bill? Oh, by the way, it was my boyfriend that I hit. Or like, you know, her boss, you know, she's done nothing presumably but good things for the business. And then her boss is like, well, you didn't tell me this one thing, what she was just trying to handle on her own. So I'm gonna have to fire you. And just, or, you know, Haley Lou, even like, it's sort of innocuously, like, I didn't tell you because I thought you'd be mad. Like, it's just like little things where it's like, you're sort of, it's just kind of a bummer. Like, it's just you put out such good vibes into the world, and then there's such a stark difference, I think, between people like disappointing you and people just sort of failing in ways that you want to encourage them. You know what I mean? Like, I just, it's it. I think the moral of this rambly mess that I'm babbling here, and feel free to edit out whatever you want to edit out, is like,
No, it's all.
I just think that it's the movie feels real because I think it points out how everyone is flawed. And even if you want to be the very best you can be, it's impossible. And I think that even if you give people enough rope, you're only going to give them enough to maybe hang themselves with or hang you with, right? And it's just such a difficult task to be put in, especially for this. Like, you know, she's a woman in charge of a bunch of like high school, college age girls, right? That just, they're all struggling to figure out who they are. Some are mothers, some have more responsibility than others, and it's just, it sucks. And you have like a girl who just gets a tattoo of Steph Curry because she thought he's the greatest of all time, and then she can't have that, so she's gonna get, like, it's just like what kind of dumb decisions are you making? Like, I don't want to have to fire you, but you know that I have to fire you.
Well, yeah, what is it? What does she say? At when she goes, when Lisa goes with Cubby, and he says, "What's my number one rule?" And she goes, "No drama." And she's like, "I'm dealing with a bunch of young 20-year-old women." She's like, "That's like telling them not to breathe," and that's not her taking a shot and saying, or saying that all women are dramatic. But you know what? Yeah, like I mean, just. I've never worked in just I've never had like that steady as a freelancer, and like I'll work with certain people all the time, but it's just like I can't, working in that environment, that's gonna happen to anybody, that just any regular kind of drama. And so for her to say that she even knows that, and they try. Well, this is actually a good opportunity to play. Like, I have one clip I wanted to play, and that's just Lisa and Macy explaining to the newcomers, like, what, kind of about training day. So I'll play that clip right now.
Can I ask, do you get like grabbed?
It happens, yeah, like when someone's super wasted or whatever, but it's pretty rare, and you can usually tell when something like that's coming, you know, and just kind of like,
Let me just say this. We have a zero tolerance policy on it. You know, I don't mind calling the cops if customers commit the crime of sexual assault. And trust me, I don't have to call FAR because you know what? We have a lot of officers who are regulars.
And Officer Dominguez is a cutie, I think.
But seriously, y'all, let me just say, the most important thing is that this is a mainstream place, you know, and it's a family place, which means a lot of families come here. And it also means that we're all family. And yeah, you're not, you know, you're not wearing a whole lot of clothes, but trust me, if these guys wanted to go to a strip club, they know where to find them. They just come here so some sweet girls can take good care of them. It's like working at Chili's or Applebee's, except it's more fun and the tips are way better.
Usually.
If you know how to work it.
Okay, so be informed. That's like, she was like, be responsible. It's kind of the same part of that.
Fuck that. I play better sports than that fag.
Oh, oh my gosh, you're a badass, huh? Do you want a refill on that big ass beer? Mm-hmm. So big ass is our large size. So I found a good connected moment to pause the conversation, kind of leave him wanting more, right? And, you know, sell that beer. Touch-wise, a little touch on the shoulder, arm area, hand, that's all good, but nowhere else. And try not to squeeze because that can get weird, real weird. Yeah, and notice how I open my mouth real wide when I laugh, like, yeah, that's just like, y'all don't have to do that. I just find it works really well for me.
And I think what's difficult about, you know, when you're hiring people for a job like this, whether it's retail, whether it's service, whether it's whatever, is that you know, just based on the odds, that people are going to steal from you, that people are going to not show up for you, that people are not going to care. Yeah. And yet you just have like this, the revolving door, right? Like it's in retail, like, I don't know if it's like, it's got to be like a crazy, like I think I knew the number at one point, maybe when I was working retail, but like it's a crazy high turnover percentage, right? Like you're going to have people who like don't leave, but other than that, like it's going to be like basically all new people every 18 months or something like that, right?
Well, the one woman that doesn't stay, she goes, I have four other interviews today.
Yeah.
Like people aren't, you know, there are certain jobs out there that, well, I mean, people don't look at as a career, and also you can't look at it as a career because of your, you know, the income you'd be making from it.
On my second day at Best Buy, I was like, you know, maybe this will be my career. Maybe I'll become like an assistant manager, then the manager. And then on day three, I was like, oh no, that's not gonna happen. Like it's just like there's that moment where you're like, oh, I could see myself like working up the corporate rank, and then you know, running a store, and then going to corporate, and like you know, basically working up, you know, Best Buy corporate. Like there's an actual path, there's a trajectory there, and you're like, oh wait a minute, like no, retail's miserable. Like I don't want to put like you know. Everybody, you know, I feel like everybody should work retail. Everybody should work service so that if nothing else, they know how to treat people in those jobs. But if you don't have to, if you have an education, if you have the opportunities, if you have the drive, and not saying that, like, you know, working, being a manager of anything is bad because they get paid well and they're respected and, like, you know, it's a living, it's a comfortable living. Like, the money that, like, you know, even store managers were making at Best Buy when I was working there was like, oh, like, that's more than I'm making now. You know what I mean? But, like, if you have the ability to sort of, like, I went to school for journalism. I feel like, why did I go to college to then work Best Buy retail for 18 years? You know what I mean? It's just like, if you're able to do more and you have that drive, go for it. But again, it's a tough world, a tough environment when you have kids who are just like, this is not going to be my career. I just need a way to make a couple hundred bucks a week or whatever, you know, whatever for the next couple years. And then I'm going to get my quote unquote real job. Right. And it's tough because even like the people who care matter to her, like the chef,
you know, Arturo. Yeah, that's who, I was just gonna say they have a robbery in this film, and she feels Lisa does a nice thing. She, you know, recognizes, and the cop asked her like, "Oh, did you recognize that guy's face?" She says no to him, and we have an idea that she is lying to him.
Yeah,
and then she goes up to Arturo and says like, "I know that was your cousin." And we just get a hint that, like, Arturo has been going through some tough shit recently. And she says, like, you're going to have to quit. Like, I'm not going to fire you.
Yeah, and in spite of that, like, there's so many things that she could, like, in, you know, not to bring this again back to Best Buy, but like the one thing that our general manager at Best Buy, the guy who was running our store, was like, he's like, I will tolerate a lot of stuff. Like, you know, if you get sick, if you can't show up, whatever, like, I get that, like, shit happens. He's like, my number one thing is do not steal from me. If you steal from me, you're dead to me. Like, if you steal from our store, like, this is, as again, like, this is your family. Don't steal from your family. And while we were there, we had a handful of, like, in the year I was there, we had like 3 or 4 employees who were fired for theft. Like, whether it's stealing money or stealing product or whatever, because people are like, oh, I know exactly how to do this. Like, I have the key. I can get out of here, whatever. And like, no, you're going to get caught. Yeah. And I think in that regard, Regina Hall's character, Lisa, could be like, you're dead to me. Like, you're gone. I don't ever want to see you again. I don't want to talk to you again. But I think because she treats it like a family and she knows these people, and even though we don't, this is not a movie about Arturo, but we know enough about him to know that there's sort of a reason other than he's just greedy, right? But like, she's like, you can use me as a reference. You can, you know, have people like, I'm going to have you quit. Like, you're not going to be fired. Like, it's not going to, you don't have to tell people whatever. You know what I mean? Like, there's little moments like that that just show her genuine kindness and where she, things that she doesn't have to be doing. And yet, in spite of that, people still can't help but take advantage of her because they're like, oh, you know, she's a softie. We can get one over on her or whatever.
Yeah, just the, between the core trio of, you know, Regina and Haley Lou, and then I think it's Shayna McHale or McHaley, which she hasn't been in a lot of stuff, and that definitely brings, she you know, as the character of Danielle, and she just brought that, you know, definitely that mumblecore vibe to it. She just felt so real out of, you know, I mean, because she, I mean, maybe she doesn't have the credit or the name recognition that of right. Regina or Haley, but she just had such a real vibe to her and felt like, I've met that person before. And she, while I get, I mean, you know, she wasn't dealing with a lot of drama in the movie. She had, you know, the key points of dealing with that, you know, audio video guy, and then just having just all these little moments throughout the film. And she's kind of like our,
plus she's a mom.
It's, yeah, exactly. Plus she is the active mom that we see in the movie. I think Lisa says that she has 2 kids that are grown up, because then it's a very awkward scene where, so I guess she was trying to get Cameron to move out. Right? And so she was looking at that place specifically for him? Or were they just looking for that place for the two of them? I was a little confused by that scene when, you know, he picks her up and then she's like, oh, well, let's go look in an apartment. And she's saying that it would be only them, but then says something about, like, it being just him, so...
I think they're on the verge of a divorce, or they're separating or whatever, and she's... I don't know why she has to help, but even he's like... You can see sort of why, and again, it's hinted at throughout the movie, and I think we might have even talked about it before, but, like, you can see why she's so good, and she's so pure, and she's so driven and focused, and wants to be motherly and supportive, but he's like, sorry, you can't cross this off your list. Like, I feel like that relationship, like, not saying that's a bad thing, but he was just driven away. And I think that was, like, a nice, like, I think, again, that could have been maybe a little bit more clear, but I think the fact that he's like, sorry, you can't cross this off your list, like, he's just annoyed by the fact that everything has to be, like, a task to her. Right?
Like, yeah. He was, I mean, he was, like, polite to the real estate agent, said, like, sorry for bothering you, you know, or wasting your time, this isn't something we're gonna do today. And then he said, like, the two big things. Well, he says to her, yeah, like, the checking off your list, and then she kind of says, you know, like, I deal in the business of sad guys all day.
Yeah.
And it's just like, oh, when she said that, I'm like, just, you know, from a guy's perspective, I'm like, that's the last thing he wants to hear. Whether it's the,
like, with, it's true, I mean, it definitely does still.
Yes, it definitely, you know, it definitely sounds like the truth. It sounds like he's a sad sack. So I, you know, we don't know. There is a lot of ambiguity to with the you know, character of Arturo, or with Cameron, that we don't know exactly what situation they're in right now. We know his daughter's in college. We know that him and Lisa have been, you know, are married, or, you know, together or whatever. But maybe he's been fired and he's just sitting in front of the laptop and trying to find jobs. Like, we don't know. But all we know is that, yeah, he is kind of being a sad sack, and she's just not, I mean, it, you know, while being very caring, not separating her work from her personal life enough. Is there any other specific scenes?
I have one other note that I want to make is that they're doing the car wash that Cubby does not know about, and they're sort of trying to do it under the radar a little bit. She's like, oh yeah, training exercise, we do this all the time, blah blah blah, whatever. And she goes out there and she's like, this is what we're, like, just be vague about it. Like, we're not raising money for this one employee, it's just like for general, you know, rainy day fund or whatever she says. She goes out there and Dylan Galula is like, the, you know, the new hire, says something along the lines of like, you know, should we lie? Like, I think we could take advantage. She's like, I'm totally like a marketing major. And, you know, she's like, well, I told the guy, like, the guy, this one guy asked, you know, is this for boob jobs for all the girls? And I said, yes, and gave me $50. And Regina Hall, like, all this time has basically been like, no, 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 like, don't do this. Like, don't lie to them. And she's like, well, I, you know, like, I guess that's okay. Like, just like, I just love that, like, moment of like, well, you know, I guess it's harmless enough, right? Like, it's, you know, whatever. If he wants to give us $50 because, like, he thinks we're going to have bigger boots, like, what? It's just, like, dumb, you know, whatever. I just love her sort of reversal in that moment of, like, oh, you know, yeah, I guess yeah, just do your thing. Like, I think on the grand scale of things that she wants to deal with, like, this is so low on the list that, like, she would rather them be vague and sort of be like, oh, yeah, just in case. But also, dealing with a husband who's walking out on her or whatever, or dealing with, you know, McCray in there, or dealing with Cubby and dealing with this and dealing with that, and like, just fine, do your thing. I just love that little like, I guess okay.
Oh yeah, she had a very similar scene later then with Macy, when Macy's talking to the professor, and then she's like, listen, like, I don't want to say, you know, like, show a bad precedent or set a bad precedent for the girls that, like, stuck around to help that day. And then Macy goes like, oh, I was talking to him and he's got, you know, lawyer friends. And, he, you know, he said he knows someone that could help out Shaney. And she's like, oh, really? She's like, and then she goes like, you know, you're the best. And it's just, these are just women, you know, people that are working with what they got and in the situation that they've put in, or for some of them, like, you know, some have, you know, are choosing to be in again with the, you know, Shaney has this moment that she could have this clear break from this guy, but she's unfortunately, you know, stuck in this abusive relationship. I want to thank you for bringing this movie to my attention,
because
it was a very, I rented it on Amazon, so you can, you know, foodies, you can rent it on Amazon right now, I think also like on Vudu and other things.
Another
like
nice thing, it's only 90 minutes. It's 90 minutes including the credits that you said you stayed, like, it's, it doesn't overstay its welcome. It, I think it flies by. I think for a movie
really
that doesn't
have
a ton of plot, that's more basically just a character study of Regina Hall's character, like, it flies by.
It doesn't have a ton of plot. It's primarily in one location. Yeah, and it just, it's got a great, great pace to it that I was, you know, I mean, I saw the length before I started the movie, but yeah, it was, you know, had a great pace to it. And like you said, I watched it throughout, you know, the whole credits, and I just thoroughly enjoyed this movie. So it's definitely worth a watch. I think also if you have Hulu, you can watch it for free on Hulu. I do not have Hulu currently.
Yeah, I bought the Blu-ray. This is one of those ones that I rented last year, and I was like, oh no, I love this. I mean, obviously, you know, I know some of the listeners, if they have heard you talk about either seeing Butter on My Shelves, or you hear you and Brian talk about it or whatever, but I own a lot of movies, so it's not like rare. It's not like I own 20 movies and this is one of them, but this is one of those ones where I was like, oh, I want to watch, I want to own this just so that I can always watch it whenever I want to watch it.
Definitely. Oh, and one last little thing I want to say, it's not a little thing, it's a big thing, is that Regina Hall won the New York Film Critics Award for Best Actress, and she was the first African-American to do so for this role. I mean, she got a lot of praise for this role, deservingly so.
Sure.
And really, just a tremendous, you know, role that she portrayed, and same thing again with Haley Lou and Shayna McCallie, and just a great movie, and I'm definitely a movie that I plan on recommending to all, obviously everyone that's listening here, and plenty more people, and I would have no problem just sitting down and watching again right now.
And I will also say that Andrew Bujalski, the director, has two other movies that I think are relatively acquirable. He did this weird as hell movie, Computer Chess, that I saw once in an airport on the way back from a trip in Vegas for work. So I need to give that movie another second shot, but it is weird as hell, but also good. And then he did a movie a couple years ago called Results, which I really liked, and it's more, again, sort of a character study, kind of like a smaller, more intimate movie about like a personal trainer and sort of that kind of world-ish. But this guy, as far as I'm concerned, 3 for 3 in good movies, sort of smaller movies. I would imagine that like all three movies combined maybe cost $5 or $10 million to make, like, in total. Like, I don't know what the actual budget, but like, they're all small movies, you know what I mean?
Yes,
so
yeah.
If you like this one, if you want to know more or whatever, check out Computer Chess and check out Results. Both great. And this one, obviously, I think my favorite, but really, really great.
Well, you heard it here, people. The godfather of the Cage Club podcasting network recommending, you know, the work of the godfather of Mumblecore. So there you go. Well, moving on, I sent you an email with three links in it. They are all very appropriate for the work that you do in the network. So you'll select one at random.
So I wish that I could do it at random, but I will be honest and upfront with you that my Gmail showed me a preview of what these were, so I know what they are,
okay,
unfortunately. Well, I should have just steered clear of my email, but I looked just to make sure that I got the email in time.
Well, I should have done it the way I did last time and sent it as separate emails.
But it's okay. Let's go with number one.
Yeah, you know, I had a feeling that if I gave you the option, that's the one you would have went for.
I love... Like, number two is funny, and number three is something that I quote all the time, but I gotta go number one.
Yes. So, well, you know, let's mention the three, and then we'll play the first one, and then obviously talk about that one. So the three clips, please tell the foodies out there which three clips I sent you.
So number two, the one that I think is really funny, is I'm assuming it's the one, because I didn't watch the clip, but it's from The Weatherman with Nicolas Cage, where he is just getting food. I'm assuming it's the one where he has food thrown at him while he's on the street.
Yeah, the Wendy's Frosty.
Yes, which is wonderful. I mean, this is... If you want to talk about, like, a depressing movie that has some moments of levity, like The Weatherman, hoo boy, that's a dark movie.
Oh, my God. When they have, like, the living funeral for Michael Caine... Mm-hmm.
While he's still alive, yeah.
Well, yeah, exactly, yeah. And the...
Like a Rock.
Bob Seger. Like a Rock, yeah. Oh,
brutal. So that was that one. And then number three, which is the one that I always quote, which actually is tied into number one, because a lot of people say number one is sort of a spiritual remake of number three, but it's in Point Break, where Johnny Utah and Gary Busey, where Keanu and Gary Busey are out in a car, and they're waiting to see the bank robbers, and then, you know, it's like 10:30 in the morning, and Gary Busey tells Keanu to go get him a meatball sub, and then on the way out, he goes, Utah, get me two.
Yeah, make it two.
But the it's just important so, one,
yeah. Yeah,
I mean, they're all important, but the important one, from the original, from the OG, 2001, The Fast and the Furious, the barbecue scene.
Yes, so without further ado, the barbecue scene.
Mia, all right, the chicken fryer.
What are you guys doing?
Wait, hold on. Because you were the first out of everybody here to reach in to get the chicken... You say grace.
Mom. Dear heavenly,
Spirit.
Spirit, thank you. Thank you for providing us with the direct port nitrous injection. Four-core intercoolers and ball-bearing turbos and titanium valve springs. Thank you.
Amen.
Praying to the car gods, man.
He's not the best.
What do you want?
Practice.
Look who it is. Old Coyotes R Us. I thought you weren't hungry, pumpkin. You know, I gotta eat.
He's always hungry.
All right, sit down.
Who doesn't love a good family dinner? And this is, you know...
Of course.
I think there was actually on the when I guess it on the first two Fast Two Furious episode that I was on for Fast Five.
Too Fast Two Forever, please.
Wait, what did I just say?
Too Fast Two Furious.
Oh, I'm sorry.
We used to do it all the time too. So by no means is that a first time. Like we finally
Too Fast Two Forever,
where Joe and I are like, oh no, we know what the show is called, but like for a while we're like, oh yeah, you know, Too Fast Two Furious. We're like, oh wait, no, that's not us.
Yes, so Too Fast to Forever, and I was on, forgive me, what lap was this?
You were on lap four.
Four, yes. And for Fast Five, a movie that I did not enjoy the first time, and now it's my favorite in the series.
Yeah.
So, there you go. And you have a question section at the end, and I actually got it right, which was of the... I forget exactly how you phrased the question, but it was the punishment or
yes,
punishment,
yes, yes,
the,
yes. what the punishment is if you are the first person to take a bite of food from the barbecue.
Yeah, you want to say grace. Say grace, yes.
Which
is, I think, just a great value right there. You know, that's a great thing to do. Well, let's talk about this scene and what this means in the franchise and just what, you know, let's get into it.
Well, so what I love about this, the first thing that it made me think of is that as we are going through, we are actually now at the tail end of lap four. We're about to transition into lap five when this comes out. Actually, no, we're still going to be in the heart of lap four. We're going to have another couple episodes in lap four, but, you know, the same lap that you were on, we're still in. But with the start of lap four, Joe and I started doing the Fast and Furious Minute, where there's other podcasts like the Star Wars Minute that go, that their entire episode is a minute-by-minute breakdown of a movie, right?
Okay.
And so I was selling Joe on this idea, and I was like, I want to do this with the Fast and the Furious, and I think he was interested in it. I think he was interested in it, but he didn't know exactly how it was going to work or how it would sort of shape out or, you know, come out or whatever. And I finally had the idea, like, let's just do 1 minute per episode. So before you come on, before the guest joins us to talk about the movie, Joe and I do an opening segment that's usually like an hour long of reading emails that we get, of, you know, just catching up with our lives or whatever. And one of the things that we've started doing in that each week, each episode, is the Fast and Furious Minute. And so we're minute by minute breakdown. So we're about 11 or 12 minutes in right now as this episode comes out. But what I'm excited about by this clip is that this is a 2 minute scene. So we're going to have two full, or maybe even like, and it's over 2 minutes, we're going to have like 2-3 minutes about this barbecue. And I love that. Like, we're going to go into crazy detail about this, you know, much later, because we're still, you know, 12 minutes in. We haven't even gotten to the first race yet. But there's a lot more to do, but I can't wait to get to this part in the Fast and Furious Minute.
This scene, I actually, so after, you know, I watched, you know, Fast Five for the episode that I was on, and then from that, I watched the first four again. And I do, and I agree with you guys, told me on that episode, because I think I said that four was my least favorite. And it does mean a lot more now, definitely, after rewatching them.
Well, that's also what's exciting, and that's something that we've been talking about. We watched Hobbs and Shaw because it just came out in theaters, and then Joe and I recorded an episode of Furious 7, and now we're about to record an episode as you and I are talking, we're about to do this week, the episode we're going to record is Fate of the Furious. And I feel like Hobbs and Shaw put 7 and 8 in like a brand new perspective because of the way that Shaw and because of the way that Hobbs and because of the way that, in theory, maybe Cypher 2 all sort of connect into the greater universe. Then I think 4, as time goes on, you know, the series does a great job of retrofitting. So even though 4, like we talk about a lot, you know, you were not uncommon in your idea that, like, people didn't really like 4, but I feel like after the fact, 4 gets a lot of praise in retrospect because it does exciting things, and it's kind of, in ways, a soft reboot of this first movie that we're talking about.
Definitely. And, I mean, this scene just set a good precedent for then what the biggest theme of the franchise became, which is family.
Mm-hmm.
And so I love that we've got Dom and Brian showing up together, and then just the look on Vince's face. And also, when rewatching the first one, I'm like, just looking at like the outfits that everyone's wearing, I'm like, oh my god, this is so, like, you know, I always make the argument, I know it's not an original thought, that like every decade, the previous decade is still like in the first couple of years. And so just seeing what they're wearing, I'm like, this is so early, you know, so 90s slash then, like, you know, the early 2000s. Like, Vince just looks like he's kind of, like, he wears like dominatrix, like.
Yeah. A lot of fish, like, a lot of mesh in this movie.
A lot of mesh. Yeah, exactly. It's like, that's what's tough. And then I think Dodgeball got rid of that when they mistakenly have to wear like the that kind of outfits instead of their traditional garb. But anyway, I love the barbecue, and they're cooking on like the, you know, the big grill, the half, like the oil tank. And yeah, just, I mean, you know, just the simplicity of this scene of this movie than in comparison to the rest of the franchise. It's just so, yeah. I mean, what are they stealing from the trucks again?
DVD players.
DVD players. Like, I mean, because, yeah, they go, it's just, I mean, yeah, like you said, the kind of the remake of Point Break and soon, and quite possibly, right? I mean, it's pretty known at this point that, like, Keanu should be joining the franchise. Like, has it been officially said? I know the director
no.
was like,
so where okay. we're at right now is that he was supposed to apparently appear in Hobbs and Shaw,
yes,
but he and the director David Leitch, and also he sat down with The Rock, and they both, like, both conversations wanted to make sure that if Keanu joins the franchise, they do it in a way that sort of is worthy of his time. And I felt mm-hmm. like they already had mostly the script fleshed out for Hobbs and Shaw, and so they didn't want to just sort of jam him in there somewhere and then be like, oh, he'll be back later. Like, I think they want to make sure that whenever he joins the franchise, if he does, please, please let him join the franchise, that they want to make sure that the first movie he's in has a substantial part for him. So it seems like it's, I think we'd say it's better than 50-50 that he will, but it's not significantly better. Like, he's not officially announced.
And, yes, yeah.
But we know that there's going to be Fast 9 and Fast and Furious 10, and probably a Hobbs and Shaw 2 and a female spinoff, and, like, all this different
Shaw
stuff, right?
Shaw separate movie.
Yep,
I read
Shaw
the
separate
other
movie,
too.
Yep.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of potential for him to be in there, and I feel like what the franchise does well, not only ramping up the action, but also adding in big names, and I feel like there's not that much more room to go. But I also think it's kind of funny, just to sort of diversify for a second, that, like, every franchise is like, how can we get Keanu in here? Like, it feels like also every day, like, you know, I still have a Google alert because of Keanu Club, because of the Keanu podcast that Mike and I did, but, like, every day it's basically like, well, what about for this Marvel movie? Like, could he be in Guardians? Could he be the Moon Knight? Could he be this? And I'm just like, yeah. Everybody wants Keanu. Like, hey, we were there before anybody, like, before he reemerged as John Wick, as, like, this, you know, aged action star, right, that is, like, willing to be, like, kind of the butt of a joke and take a hit and all this different stuff, but also be cool as hell. We were there, and so, you know, remember that.
It's paying off. I mean, he's being put in some pretty fantastic movies,
yeah.
So. Is there anything else you'd like to say about this scene, about just the whole, you know, family and the barbecue, and, I mean, is that what you're trying to bring to your Cage Club barbecues, to the ones
a little
that
bit? I mean, I kick it off for sure with the Corona.
With the Corona? Yeah, exactly. How could we not? I'm forgive me for not just saying Corona from the beginning. That's what Dom is all about. And I don't think, it doesn't feel like, I mean, like Corona had stakes in this movie.
No, they didn't sponsor it. That the story behind that was that this is the Corona was the beer that the people in the scene, like in the racing scene in Southern California, drank.
Oh,
and they
so
were
bro,
so
like
authentic
the authenticity to it, yeah.
In trying to recapture what that feels like, that they had that. Like, they had all the right parts and all the right beers and all this different stuff. And if you talk to people, like, there's kind of a divide. Like, people generally, I think, if they like one of these movies, they like all the movies. But there's a divide between people who like the first three, which are clearly more about the cars,
yes,
and then four is a pivot point, and then people who like five and beyond, which are more about action than cars. Like, there's still cool
yeah,
car
heist,
stuff and everything
yeah.
like that. But there's, like, this sense of, like, early on, these are movies that care about the culture that I'm a part of, the world that I'm a part of, tuner culture, whatever. They even have the beer right. This is a movie for me.
Yeah, I mean, it clearly shows, even through the, you know, the grace that is said. I mean, I forget the exact quote of all the different parts and all the things that he's thankful for, but that's just, it is just, I mean, watching, I mean, the first one, I don't know, going off of the first three, which ones in the ranking of, like, it's about cars? I almost feel like 1, 3, 2. You've got Tej and Sookie and in the second
I would
one.
Say, yeah, 1, 3, 2, I think, but, like, in comparison to the later ones, 2 is still much more than any of the other ones, but, yeah, I think 2
oh, yeah,
is also,
yeah.
2 is also where it sort of starts getting wacky, like, they have, like, the boats, and they have, you know, all the different stuff, and I feel like they're sort of branching out that way, but 1 is very firmly about the cars, 3 is about the drifting of the cars, and, like, that's specifically there in Tokyo, and then
yeah.
2 is still car-heavy, but not as much as the other two.
It's I unfortunately read the spoiler cameos of Hobbs and Shaw, but that's not going to keep me from seeing it. I do need to still go see it in theaters, though.
Yeah.
Wish I could have seen it with you guys. I know there was a family outing.
Well,
to go.
Don't worry, because literally every year for maybe forever, we will have another family outing to go see another one of these movies, because they're not going to stop coming out. So, like, next May, block it off. I think May 22 or something it comes out. So the night before, we'll go see it. So just block your calendar. The date is out there. Another family field trip to see Fast and Furious, Fast 9.
Did you guys grab any food together?
We did have dinner at a little restaurant you might know called the Cheesecake Factory, which was funny.
Oh.
And then we got drinks at TGI Fridays, another cool little indie spot. So
yeah,
but yes.
You didn't go to Double Whammy?
No, unfortunately. Okay. We did not go to Double Whammies.
Okay. Well, one little thing I like to do for repeat guest, or for the second time someone comes on, is I have a question, and I believe Mr. Manzi answered it with Nicolas Cage. So while that's interesting, if you say the same, feel free to do so.
Oh, the dream dinner guest, right?
Yes. Who would be your dream dinner guest? Past, present. I don't know if future makes sense, but future. who would you like? You could have, a good sit down meal with any meal. Even go into detail of what meal you would like to have with them. But please, who do you think?
So as I was listening to that episode, I think that was maybe the diner episode.
Yes.
And I don't know how I still. So there is side note for a second.
Good memory.
There was the Axe commercial, I think, that was like, scent is the strongest sense tied to memory. And like, basically, like, smell good and she'll remember you. Like, dumb shit like that, right? But I remember there's something about me and like podcasts, and like specifically like listening to conversations, like especially good conversations. Like, I this is going to be a compliment. I know that like all of the conversations you've had on here are good, but I feel like there's certain ones that are like better. And I think that, the Big Fat Greek Wedding, like I told you, like I love that episode. I think a lot of your first cut are really great, but there's something like when you and Mike or you and Brian get on and just like there's the rapport there. And I felt like the diner one, I was like, oh, this is a great conversation. And I remember, unlike scent being the strongest sense tied to memory, I have this weird brain thing, I guess. I remember where I was. Like, if I'm driving and listening to a podcast that I'm enjoying, I'll be able to remember where I was while listening. I remember I was coming back from a Christmas party, or no, it was a Thanksgiving weekend party that was just like a housewarming that turned into a surprise wedding. They pulled a April and Andy.
Wow.
And I remember coming home, and I remember on the way there and on the way back, hearing you guys talk about diner. And so as I'm driving and you ask Mike that question, he kind of hems and haws a little bit. I'm like, dude, there's one very obvious answer. And he finally gets there. He's like, oh, Nicolas Cage. I was like, yeah, finally. But I'm like, I'm yelling, like, there's a lot of people that like a podcast talk about, like people yelling at their radio, like, I can't believe they're not talking about this, they don't remember, blah blah blah. And I'm there like come on, man. And then he gets the right answer in the end. I was like, yeah, of course it's Nicolas Cage. But I think to give a different answer, because I think that is my answer, but to sort of mix it up a little bit, I would say Paul Walker.
No.
Again, in the grand scheme of things, is he the most important person I could talk to? No. But I think that he would be, he just seemed like a good guy. Obviously, I love him in the Fast and Furious movies. And there's this new theory that Brian's friend Kate Hudson, who he found for High School Slumber Party, right over from Jaiba, and she was just on our Furious 7 episode, and she's got some really interesting theories about how the franchise shifted in the wake of his death. And I would love to sort of pick his brain in a kind way. Like, hey, remember when you died? I've got questions about that.
Yeah.
But, like, I want to sort of know the sort of the behind-the-scenes thing. Like, I think, like, it's not going to happen, but it's not inconceivable that one day Joe and I could, in theory, like, interview Vin Diesel, right? Like, it's not going to happen. I know that, but it's not crazy. Like, if that happened, I'd be like, oh, that's awesome, but that's also, like, kind of, in a way, what we're working toward, right?
You never know. I mean, all it takes is, I mean, the right place and the right time or the right,
We need our Pat LaFrieda of the Fast and Furious world.
Yes, exactly.
And then, because, like, once we get one, we'll get everybody. But
yes,
Paul Walker's somebody that we could never, for obvious reasons, interview, never talk to. And I think that in a dream scenario, this thing that we are so passionate about, that we care so much about, I would love to sort of pick his brain and just learn a little bit more about that.
Yeah, I would love to hear from him what he thinks, especially, I do find it a bit ironic, the shade that's being thrown around by the different actors, especially now with the spinoff, given the fact that it's all, the big theme of family. And just hearing, there's been between what Tyrese tweeting about, I guess it wasn't Hobbs and Shaw wasn't as big as people
was
hoping for it to be. And Michelle Rodriguez kind of saying something about Was his name Chris Morgan, the writer?
Yes.
Yeah, just, you know, a lot of, I mean, which, hey, that's going to happen in Hollywood and with actors and with egos with anybody. But just, you know, that shift too, maybe not just in story, but like possibly the personalities and just seeing, because he just, yeah, Paul Walker just had that such a, just, obviously I did not know him, but just seemed like such a genuinely kind guy and just was the soul of that franchise, in my opinion. And yeah, so it feels, you know, there definitely is a void there in, you know, in the eighth entry, and just kind of curious how they'll address it, because, you know, what, Jordana Brewster's coming back, and so how just they'll take care of all that. So that would be, you know, that would be a very fascinating conversation. So, and maybe then when you're, like, leaving the Cheesecake Factory with him, then you'd run into Mike leaving a diner with Cage, and the four of you could hang out.
Yeah, and then we could, yeah, that would be the dream. All four of us, whew.
Yeah, well, Joey, thank you so much for making this happen.
And, of course.
Introducing me to support the girls, and obviously all the hard work you do for the network. It is clear to me and many others. I'm obviously happy to hear that. I know you wouldn't just be doing it just out of a, you know, hey, we're not making any money from it, so. But thank you. So please, right now, tell the foodies, you know, everything about the network and just all our, you know, ways to contact, and, you know, because big thing that I'm trying to remind people now, as you guys do, as Brian does, and just for some reason I didn't always say it on these beginning episodes, is the clear things of liking, sharing, commenting. But that's how you guys can help us out the most, and obviously means a lot when we see you guys do that. So please, right now, tell them where they can do so.
So we put out about 40 to 50 episodes of different podcasts each month. We have 25 shows, not all active in production right now, but we put out between 40 and 50 episodes per month. Basically, every weekday there's a new episode, at least, if not two or three or more. My shows, you can get everything at cageclub.me or wherever you get Foodie Film, so iTunes, Spotify, Stitcher, Google Play, wherever you want to get that. They're all subscribable at all those places. My shows, every other Tuesday, though right now we're in a stretch of like a 10-week stretch where it's every week. Every other Tuesday, Too Fast, Too Forever, the Fast and Furious podcast, which we were talking about with the famous food scene. Go check that out. Kyle was on this lap. We had a whole lap with your past multiple repeat guest, Mike Manzi, did the ride-along lap. He will be on also again very shortly for the third time, I guess, so a second and a half time that we're talking about Hobbs and Shaw, so he'll be on again soon. Your buddy Brian's on once a lap, so that's pretty cool. Every Thursday now, we are putting out a new Ryan Gosling Boyfriend Material podcast. Joe and I are sort of burning through the rest of those, because the schedule of that has changed more than the schedule of this has changed. Like, we went from a monthly show to every 3 months to now weekly, and we are just burning off the rest of those. Wow. So go check that out every Thursday. And then every Friday, Mike and I do the Tom Tom Club, alternating Tom Cruise and Tom Hanks, two different podcast feeds. You were just on a recent episode of Turner and Hooch with Brian Rodriguez. So that episode will have come out last week, I believe, as this comes out. So go check that out. But you're also on our cocktail episode, and you'll be on at least one more coming up. But yeah, Tom Cruise, Tom Hanks. I am loving the Cruise side of it. Tom Hanks side of it is a little trying, a little troubling, but we are about to turn the corner and get to his peak 90s stuff, and I could not be more excited to do that.
Yeah, you got a lot of stuff to look forward to ahead in his career, to, you know, to say the least. So that'll definitely be good. And if you could remind, you know the phrase, so if you could remind the foodies that there's
more to cut.
Thank you very much, Joey.
Yummy, yummy, yummy. I got love in my tummy.
Perfect. Let's go get some meatball subs.
Get me too.
Yummy, 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 I got love in my tummy, and I feel like I'm loving you. Love you, such a sweet thing, goodness.